The following is a Barrett Sports Media production. We do the digging, so you don't have to.
We've got breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Bringing you the biggest stories from the industry you care about. This is the Media Noise Podcast.
Well, let's hear it.
Now, here's your host, Dimitri Ravanos.
Forgive the sound of my voice. I am getting over a little bit of an illness. If you want proof that masks do work, literally the week they let our kids take their masks off during recess at school, my daughter brings home something and I am sick for the first time in like a year and a half. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Plenty to get into. Ricky Keeler is going to join me to talk about the story he wrote about Michael Kay and the Yankee Voice's view on his shelf life left in the world of sports radio. And then we will talk various broadcasting ins and outs with Andy Mazur as both the NBA and the NHL start their playoff runs. But first, we've got just one more column left in our Meet the Market Manager series, at least for the first go-round. So first of all, thank you to the folks at Point to Point Marketing for making it all possible. Secondly, I want to talk about the column that I did this week with Brian Maloney, my old boss, actually, at Capital Broadcasting here in Raleigh. I asked him if he thought, given all of the different ways there are to consume games now, if live play-by-play is losing its value for radio stations. And he pointed out the obvious. Not everybody is going to be in front of a screen all the time. Not everybody is subscribed to ESPN Plus or whatever sort of streaming service makes these things available on demand. All fair points, for sure. And that does make the live play-by-play being on radio a little bit more valuable to stations across the country, right? If you have to jump in your car to go across town or to run to Home Depot during halftime and you're going to miss the opening kickoff of whatever game, certainly you are going to put the game on the radio. But I do wonder, as rights fees rise, and usually we see this when a team experiences either first-time championship success or championship success for the first time in a long time, as rights fees rise, that's really where I start to wonder where the value is in terms of live play-by-play on the radio. I think all the time about down in my home state, Alabama, Jocks 94.5 let the Crimson Tide Sports Network get away because for this very reason. They felt like there are so many different ways to consume the games. Alabama is charging, and Learfield are charging, an extremely high rights fee to be a part of the network because of what Alabama football has become and the loyalty of the fan base to advertisers on that network, that at one point Cumulus just decided the payoff in return for what it is we invest is not worth it anymore. And that's a market where you would say, how on earth did Jocks 94.5 ever let Bama hit the open market? But it does prove to you that even in the most passionate places, even the biggest brands can be sort of viewed in multiple different ways depending on what it is they actually are providing for the radio station. Maybe this won't happen with the Westwood One large national play-by-play packages or the ESPN, you know, the baseball playoffs or the NBA. Maybe that's not going to happen, but I do wonder if we start to look at the local teams and their radio broadcast rights, and I start to wonder sometimes if those fees are going to have to be more friendly to the affiliate in order for even some of the biggest teams to stay on marquee stations within their own markets. So a story that has really sort of had long legs on the site this week is one that Ricky Keeler wrote. It was Michael Kay appearing on the New York podcast at The Ringer with John Yastrzemski. Ricky, they talked about just sort of the idea of Michael Kay trying to balance being the Yankees play-by-play voice and also having a weekday radio show. And I at least was surprised to hear Michael Kay kind of talk about that maybe there is a day where he just has to say, I can't relate to the audience anymore. I am older than most of the people listening to me. This has less of a shelf life than being the play-by-play voice of maybe the most popular franchise in all of American sports.
Well, we always hear that when Michael Kay is on his show, he talks about how he grew up a Yankees fan, how he grew up. That was his dream job. So it was no surprise to me that he said he would rather keep the Yankee job if he had to choose between the two. But I do think when you think about the shelf life of a sports talk radio host, I mean, think about what's happened with your main Mercedes and Tony La Russa this past week, where you have the old baseball fan that kind of agrees with Tony La Russa and the young baseball fans like, just hit anyway. And then Michael Kay and Don McGregor, the get off my lawn crowd. And I think you kind of try to avoid being that on too many topics. And that's why I like what Michael said. That's why he partially had Peter Rosenberg here, because he's kind of that guy that can kind of bridge the gap. But I do think also it's a lot. You have to appreciate what Michael does, where he's covering a Yankee game till about 11:15, 11:30 most nights, going home doing research, and he has a family too. So to balance all three of those things has to be really challenging.
Yeah, the other thing that the sort of headline coming out of this column was about how much more pressure there is on him now competing with Craig Carton versus when there was when he was competing with Mike Francesa. And I think these two points are tied together. Certainly now part of it is that Carton came in as the underdog in this situation, right? When Carton came in, it was the first time Kay was firmly on top of the sports radio ratings in Afternoon Drive. But the other part of this goes to exactly what you're saying, the get off my lawn crowd. It was much easier to paint Mike Francesa that way than it is Craig Carton. Craig Carton obviously has longer to go before he ages out of the demo. But even when he does, I think Craig Carton has shown he has the ability to still relate to younger people.
It's the Carton Roberts show is interesting because it's a good mix of entertainment with Carton. And then you have Evan Roberts, who can sometimes be that old school fan, but people don't look at him as the get off my lawn fan right. as well. So I think there's a good time between the two. But there is something to that, and it's something in sports even. Like, you have less pressure when nobody really expects that much of you. And people thought the Michael Kay show would be really good, but I don't think a lot of people thought, at least when it started, that it would top Francesa. Mm-hmm. Now you have the expectation, largely because the pandemic, and people thought the Michael Kay show was great during the pandemic. It absolutely was. Now you have to keep that standard high, and they've done that. But it creates for a great rivalry, and it creates for – is, hey, if you got two great shows go to New York, that's never a bad thing for people to have an option to listen to.
How much as we go forward and baseball gets closer to normal and we return to that every year, 162 game schedule, we have labor peace, et cetera, et cetera. How much is the Michael Kay show built for Michael Kay to sort of slide into the background a little bit and let Rosenberg and Don LaGreca carry the load on days when it just may not be in him, or even shift to them carrying the load the majority of the time?
Well, we see it, I think, often, especially during the summer. I mean, we see a week where Kay might take off. He even mentioned on the podcast, and it's something well known to Yankee fans, he doesn't do every game. When the Yankees would go to, normally when they go to Texas, like they are this week, but he's at Yankee Stadium, so he's doing the game, but or Seattle or Oakland or Kansas City or something like that, he's not doing the game. He's doing the talk show more likely. So it's not uncommon. I mean, Don and Peter are very capable of doing a great job when Michael's not on the show. And I think they've both done a good job. Like, when Don's not on, Mike and Peter do good, and so on and so forth. I think he's found that balance where he's the voice of the Yankees, but he's not doing every game. So for right now, I don't think you have to worry about him burning out of doing both, because I think he's found a way to, hey, I can do the Yankee games, and then I'll just do the talk show on days where I'm not traveling and I'm home.
So the NHL playoffs are upon us. Excuse me, the Stanley Cup playoffs, have to use proper terminology. The NBA playoffs are not quite here yet because of the play-in tournament. I wanted to bring in Andy Mazur to give us a little bit of a broadcaster's perspective. Obviously, Andy, there's a lot of movement going on with the NHL's TV broadcast properties right now. We're going to get to that in a minute. But with the play-in tournament, this brand new thing for the NBA just starting, I want your perspective. Like, just take me inside the mind of somebody that would have been preparing for a sport one way, not just for the whole season, but for years, to now suddenly pivot to this kind of this, I guess, semi one and done tournament, right? Because if you're in the right game, you get two shots to make the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of have to harken back to the fact that if you've done college basketball before and you've been to a tournament setting where you have to be prepared for all eventualities. I mean, I remember going to do the West Coast Conference tournament and bring boards for every team that was there because of all the possibilities. But, you know, you had to really focus your sights on that first team, because if you didn't get past that first team, the other boards didn't mean anything anyway. So it was kind of a situation where I would pay a lot of attention to, if I was going to prepare for an hour, I would spend 50 minutes or so on the team we were going to play, and about 10 minutes between, you know, every day between some of the other teams that we could end up playing. You know, broadcasters are pretty much, I don't know if you're at any more of a disadvantage than you would have been had the playoffs been normal, so to speak, this year. I think the only thing that really threw things off was last year being in the bubble, where you don't have really a chance to be in your home base and get your preparation done.
I don't know how much you watched of that Indiana-Charlotte game. Like, the crowd just didn't seem super into it. It didn't have the feeling of a, if we lose this, we're going home sort of game. So what do you do in that situation as a broadcaster to meet the needs of the play-by-play partner and also the reality of what people are seeing on TV?
You kind of got to build the drama. I mean, you have to look into the kind of like the wild card games in Major League Baseball, you know, when it's now a one and done situation there as well. And that was relatively new. And I don't know how many fans really, you know, understood it at that point. You know, and baseball is such a much longer season. So there's a whole lot to build to in that respect. But, you know, I think in this, we talk about it a lot. You know, you really have to manufacture it. If you're not getting it from that fan base and you're not getting it from a full arena or even a 25% capacity arena, you kind of have to choose your words, you know, choose dramatic words.
So I want to pivot now to the NHL because we are in the playoffs. That means we are in the home stretch of the decade that a decade and a half, really, that the NHL and NBC have been in this marriage. And we ran a story the other day that says it is coming to an end at one of the lowest viewing points that it has been the whole time that the NHL has been on NBC. It feels like, and maybe it is because I live in a place where we had a team that didn't make the playoffs for 12 years and is now suddenly one of the favorites for the Stanley Cup. So maybe it's local bias, but it feels like the NHL's popularity nationally is picking up. It's a little bit hard to figure out how those two facts jive with one another.
You know, it really is. And you hate to look at one thing and say, oh, you know, Doc Emmerich's gone. So, you know, it's hard for, you know, hard for Kenny Albert to kind of match that. And, you know, that's unfair because, you know, nobody tries to be Doc Emmerich. You know, there's only one of those guys. And I think, you know, this year and even last year, just because of the way things have gone with this pandemic and, you know, last year with the bubble. I mean, I live in Chicago where thanks to the pandemic, the Blackhawks made the playoffs last year. They weren't going to be in unless it was the situation that they were in at that point. But, you know, the way the divisions were lined up this year, I got to be honest with you. I kind of got sick of playing the same team, watching the same team every other day. I mean, it was, I understand why they did it. And I think it was brilliant in the way that, you know, you're trying to strap down travel and trying to make this as copacetic as possible for each team and, you know, make it fair for everybody. But at the same time, how many times can you watch the Blackhawks play the Blue Jackets? Some of that is in reality because we didn't get to see Connor McDavid this year. I didn't get to see Nathan MacKinnon this year. I didn't get to see any of those guys play because they're playing in a different division and you never played them. So I think there was a little bit of a lack of diversity as far as the teams that you were playing. It was cool for competition, I guess, but I don't know if it was very fan friendly. And that's kind of my thought on that.
I want to wrap up here because you mentioned the retirement of Doc Emmerich. That was the broadcast presence for the NHL. I think he was big enough that even non-hockey fans, if you were a sports fan, you knew Doc Emmerich was the voice of the NHL on NBC. Turner is swinging for the fences. They are trying really hard to get Wayne Gretzky to be sort of the center of a studio show. How important is it that they get that done, you think?
You know, it is and it isn't. I think it is because of name recognition. And obviously, the casual hockey fan knows the great one. They know what Wayne Gretzky meant to the sport and what he did. Now, there's a difference between having a guy that's sitting in the studio that has the name and there's a guy sitting in the studio that can actually do the job.
Exactly.
And is actually interested in doing the job. Because if you have to beg and plead and borrow for this guy to do it, it doesn't sound to me like he really wants to be that guy that's committed to a full season of whatever kind of broadcasting they're going to do. I mean, I just, you know, as far as I would be concerned, you know, I would take a lesser name if the guy was a good studio presence and worked well with whoever the host was and brought me something.
All right, and that will just about do it for us today. Thanks to Ricky Keeler for joining me to talk about Michael Kay, and a big thanks to Andy Mazur for talking about all things broadcasting as it relates to the NBA and Stanley Cup playoffs. Coming up for this week, what are we keeping an eye on? Well, obviously, everybody will have an eye on the NBA ratings, both in terms of the play-in action and when the playoffs proper do begin. I think you might have seen that report from Sportico that over the last 2 years, a quarter of the television audience is gone. And look, there are a whole lot of reasons for that, and you cannot dismiss any one of them. I do wonder, though, how much of this is a problem for the NBA in the sense that the audience is gone. Remember, this is the league, the major sports league with the youngest core demo, and younger people tend to be the ones consuming games on their phone through streaming, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not saying we can completely dismiss a dip in the NBA's TV ratings, particularly as they are talking about wanting in the billions for their next rights deal whenever that starts to be negotiated. If the TV audience keeps falling, I can't imagine the NBA gets it, but does the NBA have the ability to point to other platforms and say, see, the fans are still here. Don't you want this to be a proprietary part of your streaming platform? It will be interesting to see what happens to the ratings as we are back in the more traditional window for NBA playoff action. Will the ratings be as low as they were last year when the NBA Finals were going up against the NFL on weekends? So we'll take a look at that. In the meantime, everybody stay safe. If you have not already gotten vaccinated, please do, and I will talk to you next week.
This concludes our broadcast day.
Thanks for listening to the Media Noise Podcast with Dmitry Ravanos. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and leave a review. And check back soon for new episodes. To stay up to date on the latest sports media happenings, visit BarrettSportsMedia.com.